have, let's see what we're going to do today. Okay, so we're moving on, as we say. These halachas are complicated, but they're fun, but they're complicated, and they jump a little bit. As we said, when if we would learn the Gemara, then we would really get it, but we're not going to do that. So we're just doing the bits as we get from the Chumash a little bit and the Rashi. We are, the booklet I've given you, it's really the last page, page 276 of this booklet that you have. So you can go, I think it's the back of it. Because we did last time about the different kinds of ox, right? The one that gores, the three times, one time, you know, the whole thing. So now we're moving on. And this is an interesting halacha that comes in. It's to do with stealing, and it's we'll come back to some of the damages soon. A fascinating halacha, which is called, in Hebrew we have a term for this halacha, for the logic behind it, it's called Gzeiras HaKosov. Gzeiras HaKosov literally translates as a command from the Pasuk, which means we don't understand. There's not really a logic, and it's unusual, this penalty. What is this? So let's see what this is. And this only applies in this specific case. Let's see what this is. So on page 276, the back page, and it says in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Ki Yignoiv Ishar. If a man will steal an ox. So we've had similar, but here we're saying specifically an ox. Oiseh, or a sheep. And what does he do with this ox or this sheep? Utvachai, he slaughters it. Oy mecharai, or he sells it. So it has to have all of these stipulations. What does he do if he does this? If somebody steals an ox or a sheep, shechts it or sells it. Chamisha bakar yishalem tachas hashar. He pays five cattle back for the ox. And the arbatzain tachas hatzeh. And four sheep in place of the sheep. Remember we said usually with stealing, it's double, right? You pay back double. This is a unique halacha. Specifically for an ox or a sheep, if there's witnesses, and you've stolen it, right? And you've sold it or you shechted it, then you pay five for an ox, four for a sheep. Okay, this is called Gzeiras HaKosov. It only applies here, and why? So we don't really know why, but we don't ever leave it like that. We still want to understand a little bit. So the Chachamim have a whole discussion, and we'll see Rashi brings a little bit, and it's actually quite fascinating. Just a little bit will give us a bit of an insight. It's not a reason, we don't know the reason, but a little bit of insight, perhaps something to understand a little bit of this logic. Okay, so as we said, remember something interesting with stealing. If somebody, and this is going to come up soon, usually somebody steals something, they pay back double. If, interestingly, if you steal something like an armed, no, that's not the right word, not armed, but if you steal in the daylight, openly, you actually don't even pay back double, you pay back less. Because fascinating halacha that is. Why? You think that's even worse, like so brazen, you know, you're just going to go and... Because it shows that you, if you steal at night, secretly, it shows that who are you more afraid of? People, rather than Hashem. If you steal, this has nothing to do with this, we'll see, it's connected a little bit, but just on a side thing, and we'll see. But if you steal in the daytime, that means you're equally afraid of God as you are of man. So that's less severe. Fascinating. Okay? Does that not make any sense to you, Riva? Nice. So I'll tell you a very interesting muscle. It's still stealing, eh? You still have to pay back. It doesn't mean you're in, yeah. But not double. Interesting thing that I think Rabbi Meir has a very interesting idea.
As if it's twilight.
If it's twilight, eh? It means, no, what it means is if you're doing it in a way where you're trying to avoid anybody's, you know, you have a whole plan how you're going to avoid, like, you make sure nobody's home. But if you just come in and, you know, take something, you know, that's different. Most people don't do that, but... Oh, very good question. Next pasuk, we're coming to it. Sylvia, next pasuk, we're going to come to it. Okay, very good. Yes, I know, it was big on the news. And this next pasuk will deal with that. Very, yes, okay. It's a good question. But just one interesting thing that, I think it's Rabbi Meir, there's a very interesting analogy that's given for somebody who steals brazenly, so to speak, or more subtly and secretively. So there's a very interesting, because we would think of it as the person who's brazen is even worse in a way. That's like our first thought. But the Torah has a very interesting perspective, and it gives a muscle. If somebody comes to town and they make a party, and they invite only the townspeople, but don't invite the royal family. That's quite bad. What happens if somebody comes to town and they make a party and they don't invite anybody, not the townspeople and not the royal family? Which one is more chutzpahdik? Which one would be, yeah, do you understand? The one who doesn't, who invites some people and not the royal. So here again, you see how they're taking that logic, that this person, what does he take into account? Good morning, Leah. Only the people, not Hashem. Somebody who doesn't take Hashem into account and doesn't look at Hashem as a reality as much as people, that's a big problem. Okay, that's the interesting perspective. Okay, make a bit more sense? All right, let's see now this. Let's come back to this halacha here. Okay, so at Leah, we're page 276, the last page in the booklet. So you pay back 4 for a sheep, 5 for an ox. So let's see Rashi. Rashi will start. He'll give us a little bit of an understanding here. And there's two opinions. It's not they're not arguing, but there's two perspectives. Okay, so you see on the bottom, 37, Rashi. Chamisha bakar v'goymer, 5 cattle. Amar Rabbi Yechanan ben Zakkai. The Tana, Rabbi Yechanan ben Zakkai, you know, the famous Rabbi Yechanan ben Zakkai who snuck out of Jerusalem and started Yavne in the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So we have Rabbi Yechanan ben Zakkai. What does he teach us? Chas hamakim al kvoidan shel briyes. This is very interesting. Okay, we are talking about a thief. Okay, we're not going to take that. Yeah, it's a thief. And he is stealing an ox or a sheep. But he says that Hashem has pity on the dignity of people. And we're talking here about even the dignity of a thief. Now, what does that have to do with anything? So he says, Shor shahaylach beragla, for an ox which walks on its own feet, v'lein is bazeh by haganev, and through which the thief was not humiliated. Because what happens when the thief is walking in the street? He's walking, and the ox is walking near him. Well, fine and dandy. So for that, he has to pay back 5, right? Because he wasn't embarrassed at all, so he didn't go through any indignity. But he says, as he says, to hold him on his shoulder, then he mishalim chamisha, then he pays back 5. But a sheep, which he has to carry on his shoulder, mishalim arba, he pays back 4. Why? Hayel v'nispazabai, since he was humiliated through it. Okay, very interesting halacha. We'll see. Okay, so yeah, it seems to be when, it's a good question, when he stole it. Yeah, when he stole it, so he takes the sheep from the paddock, right? And how is he going to transport it? So he's going to have to carry it. The sheep is not so likely to follow him. An ox, you're not going to hold on your shoulders. He's going to have to somehow schlep him, right? So the sheep he holds and he's running, whereas the ox, he's just walking along with him. A lot less of a humiliation. So therefore, because he's already been humiliated with the sheep, so he pays back less. That's one thing. That's Rabbi Yechanan ben Zakkai. Let's see what Rabbi Meir says. Rabbi Meir has a different opinion, and it's not, as I say, it's not an argument. We'll see soon it's coming from a different perspective. Amar Rabbi Meir, because if it was an argument, it would say Rabbi Meir Oimer. Okay, you see, Amar Rabbi Meir just means Rabbi Meir said, like, another thing. Here's another way of looking at it. Come and see how great is the power of work. An ox which the thief caused to desist from its work. Then what do you have to do? Mishalim chamisha. You have to pay back 5. But for a sheep which he did not cause to desist from his work, right? Because a sheep doesn't do work. Then he only pays back 4. Very interesting. You see this? Fascinating logic here. Do you understand the logic? So each one has. Now, to analyze it, it's interesting. Just a drop of analyzing this a little bit. We'll look a little deeper. Because
what about the farmers that lost?
Oh, excellent. Very good question. Yes. What? Very good, Leah.
Excellent.
So that's very good, Leah. So the truth is that Rabbi Yechanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Meir are each coming from a different perspective. Rabbi Yechanan ben Zakkai is coming from the perspective of what the thief owes. In other words, the fact that the thief has done something wrong and he's obligated, therefore, to pay back. And not only that, but we know in Torah, it's not just a matter of obligated to pay back, it's a matter of kapara. He has done something wrong. So what is he going to do in order to attain, to get atonement. In other words, to, how do you say, to make up for it, like not, to improve himself, if you want to say, right, to better himself. So from the perspective of the thief is Rabbi Yechonah ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Meir is looking from the perspective of the owner of the loss. So let's understand what's the difference and how it works. Okay, so I'll just show you something interesting. So let me just see. Here we are. So it says like this. I'm just want to get this straight, because it's not complicated, but I just want to see how we, to understand, because it's a very, very interesting idea, this. It says like this, that the truth is that, as you just said, the big question, first of all, why Rashi has to bring both is always a big question, and it's based on because of what Leah just asked. Because if we would just have the first one, then we would say, but that's not fair, because what did the owner do to lose a repayment, so to speak, just because the thief was embarrassed, the poor owner lost, right? So that's why Rashi brings both. And it shows us something interesting. So from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's perspective, really the base amount, how much should be paid back, is five times. Because he's looking from the thief, and the thief, you would have the maximum penalty, so we could do maximum tshuva. So from the thief's perspective, the base amount is five. But now, because he suffered some embarrassment, so that's already part of his kapara. So what we do is we say, okay, so you, for now you've already like paid, let's say, one-fifth through your indignity. So now you only pay four, right? Do you understand? For the sheep. Yeah, this is only a Jew from a Jew. Yeah, yeah, that's the salacha. Yeah. So, I know, it's a whole different, yeah. No, it's different. That's a different thing. But Rabbi Meir looks at it from a different point of view. Rabbi Meir is looking from the perspective here of the owner. And he says, really, the owner is only owed four. That's really all he's owed. That's all. That's what the Torah says. Really, you're only supposed to get four. But then the Torah says, but you know what? When the thief took that ox, you didn't only suffer the loss of the ox, but you suffered the loss of the work that the ox could have done. So we're going to give you an extra bit. Do you understand? So it depends from where you're looking. That's how it makes sense. It's quite a fascinating idea if you think about it. And deeper in this Rashi, there's a whole concept that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in other places, we see that he's very, very careful about the dignity of other people. There's somewhere, I think, in the Gemara where it says that nobody ever preceded hello to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. In other words, he was always the first to greet somebody. And it's actually said, even a nochri in the shuk. That's the words used. Anybody. Doesn't make a difference who he was, Jewish, not, low class, high class, whatever it was. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was careful to be the first to extend greeting. He was so careful with the dignity of another person to the nth degree. And it says over here, if you analyze this, it's take it a bit step further. It's interesting because when we're talking about the shame, well, think this thief is not a brazen thief. Here we're talking about a thief who obviously would not really steal when people are around. I mean, he doesn't want to be caught, right? So when's he going to steal? Hopefully nobody's looking, right? So what's the shame? If nobody's looking, where's the shame? So really the only time that he's experiencing shame is when he is caught, if he's caught, and he's brought before Beis Din, and they recount everything that happens. So then the people start to think and picture him carrying the sheep. It's that teensy bit of shame. Do you see? It's not even like a real massive amount of shame where a lot of people were watching him carrying the sheep. We're just imagining that this person went home carrying the sheep. And this is from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai because, like I say, his idea of the dignity and the honor due to another person is to the nth degree. Even the little, smallest amount to him is already considered a terrible thing, and therefore that would already be as if he's paying some of it back. It's quite a beautiful thing. And Rabbi Meir in other places, it says, so this is a bit more complicated. He has a view also about taking things even that are out of the ordinary and even the smallest little detail. And that's why to him, this whole idea is, a bit harder to see. He says that even the work, and why is it a small detail? Because it's also interesting. Because with the shor, so we think, well, an ox works, right? But an ox only works certain seasons of the year. Okay, not a whole year. How do you know that you've taken the ox when it was the work season? And maybe the owner wasn't even going to be working with this ox. He has many ox. Most people don't have one ox, they have many oxen. So you're also talking about a very small detail here, but Rabbi Meir takes into account, apparently in other places, even the smallest detail. To him, nothing is negligible. So to him, even this small amount of lack of work is also important. So each one comes from their perspective, showing us that Torah, it's very fascinating that the logic is very deep, actually. And as we say, even though things come from, looks like an argument, not necessarily, depending on the perspective. And also you see that in Torah, as we've mentioned before, that the main thing is really the thief. In other words, it's the kapara, more than the compensation for the owner, right? You realize, because in Torah we have a view that really nothing can be really taken away from somebody else, because Hashem provides all our needs. So it's more about, if you've done something wrong, how are you going to fix up what you've done for yourself? So that's really the primary one, in a sense, yeah. And as we say, that also makes a healthier society. That's the idea of improving a person's character, that they won't steal again, so to speak, that idea.
So it's not the acknowledging the thief?
No, because you can, as I said, because really he was only supposed to pay four. Now we're making it up to five, you know, so, or the other way is only, you understand, he's supposed to pay five, now he only has to pay four. But really he's suffered. Mm-hmm. And it also makes him aware. Yes, and that's a very important part.
Extreme poverty, if he's poor because he's so poor and he needs food and stuff, is he going to give it to
Father? You know? Yes, that's a very good question, Sylvia. So, Bechlal, there is... Yes, so... So that's why, you know, so the truth is that there is a discussion about that, how that's going to work. Yes, they do. Yes, so that's why in Torah we have, that's what we started with exactly, that the whole thing that we do is we actually have the idea of slavery. That if the, first of all, if the person can't pay back the sheep, or you sell everything he owns. If he doesn't own anything valuable, then you sell his property. If he doesn't have property, then you sell him. And then he's rehabilitated because he lives in a household of people who are financially honorable. And hopefully that will rub off on him. And that's the idea. That's the goal. Yeah. So it's an interesting process of how it all. So do you remember we said the that was the first halachas days? That's a good question. So the one who buys him has to supply his family's needs as well. Yes. So that's amazing.
Could you save yourself for a day or for a
week? No, it doesn't work like that. You're sold till Shemitah, right? That's what we said, 6 years. Yeah.
So if I only owe five coins, and I don't have, what do I do?
Well, as we say, if it's like you've done everything, like you mamish have nothing. Yeah, well, then you'll have to be sold because you have to pay back. I don't think it would actually happen, but... for the thief, eh? What could you do? Leah, it wouldn't happen, as we know. I mean, let's be honest, somebody would give it to him, but it's usually somebody who's a little bit more, what's the word, does it a bit more, you know, kind of a thing. And he probably wouldn't be caught with one, you know. It's not something that you, yeah, it wouldn't be that, such a scenario. Yeah, I don't think so. You'd have some nice neighbor who would pitch in a little bit. I'm sure. And this person is obviously so poverty-stricken, you understand? So what's he been doing? Like, it's not only a matter of being hit on hard times, you understand? He has absolutely, he doesn't even have clothing to sell. And it's, something is much more wrong there. Yeah. Okay. If you think about it. So, yeah. Okay. So now, I just want to see one more thing before we move on to the next part, because Sylvie asked a good question. Just to make sure, this is the end of this parrot. This is Perikov Bays. There was one beautiful thing here that... there was also a very interesting thing that the Rambam has an interesting idea. He says that an easy and common crime can only be discouraged by a greater punishment. So that's why, I think maybe we mentioned it last time. So that's why when you have something which is more rare and more difficult, then the lighter the penalty, which we might think the other way around. Because we want to, the whole goal is to eradicate the bad behavior. So if something is more common, we'll make it a more severe punishment because we have to make sure to get rid of it. But if something is very, very rare, so even a light punishment is enough, so to speak, because you're punishing him, right? And it's a rare thing that doesn't happen often. So he says an interesting thing also, that The other thing, fascinating concept with, and this is also now, I just saw it recently in Australia, there was a whole thing with farmers having their sheep being stolen. And it was very interesting. So it says a fascinating thing that with sheep and cattle, there's a little bit of a, it's an indictment on society, because when you have sheep and cattle, they're in the paddocks. And it's really almost impossible, even nowadays with all technology, to have surveillance to watch over all of your sheep and your cattle, which means that what we are doing is we are trusting society, that society is not out to steal. I mean, we're hopefully an honorable society. And Torah says that's the way it should be. So if somebody dares to go and steal a sheep or an ox, what they're doing is they're violating the, if you want to say, the basis of our society. So therefore, we make his punishment much harsher. We say 4 or 5, not just double, because this is a terrible behavior. This is a behavior that will knock out literally the way we live. I mean, you can't live like that, you know, like as we know in South Africa, people don't live, you know what I'm saying? You can't live when you're constantly worried about things that you should not have to worry about, as we say. So that's the idea. Also, it's quite a beautiful concept that we see. It's interesting how yeah, I just saw recently, it was quite sad to see what's happening.
Just say,
sure.
I had a farm, a cattle farm, and 40 head of cattle were stolen, 40. And there's a lot of investigation and everything. It was the policeman in the town that stole the cattle.
Oy vey. That's the worst corruption.
He organized, it was an outpost, it wasn't a busy town or anything, but the policeman was caught.
Unbelievable. He sold it. It's exactly what it said. He would have been obligated 5 times. Oh my gosh. Wow. That's interesting, because you know what? It's fascinating how you say this story, because what it says is, why does it put the stipulation of selling it or shechting it? Because that shows that it was like it's planned, as you see. And this is a very big part of the Avera, that this is not just, as you're saying, it's not just a desperate person who needs a lamb for supper. You know, that's not what we're talking here, Leah. We're talking somebody who has a whole scheme, you know, a whole, yeah.
And the way they caught him, he had bought a new motor car.
Oh my gosh, with the money he's...
Suspicious,
unbelievable. Be caught. Ay, ay, ay. Okay, so as he says, the thief is guilty. The beautiful words of Reb Shamshon Fel Hirsch is that the thief is guilty on 2 accounts. For a breach of trust towards the owner in particular and towards society in general. And this is a big problem. Okay, so this is just one thing. We're going to move on now to the next psukim. And let's see. Oh, you need your new pages. So let's see the next set of halachas here. Fascinating. Yeah, we'll just make a little pile of these maybe in the middle so we don't have to hear anything. You can pass around. Rona, here, this is for you. And here for Sylvia. Here we go. Now, there's more there. Yeah, did you get? Did it go around or no? Daisy, you have
thank
a few?
You.
Beautiful. Is there enough there? I don't know. Give in. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. Very good. Excellent. Okay, so let's see now the next thing. Okay, so the next pasuk is, okay, so this is already Perek Chaf Beis. Okay, exactly what you just asked, Sylvia. Next pasuk. Okay, Im B'machteres. Interesting pasuk, this one. Im B'machteres Yimotzei Haganav. So the translation here, they translate, if the thief will be found in an underground passage. We'll see what Rashi says in a minute. V'huka, and he is struck. Vames, and he dies, the thief we're talking about. Ein loydamim, there is no blood for him. Let's understand what this pasuk means. But you know what I want to do? I want to read one more pasuk and then we'll understand. The next pasuk says, Im zarcha hashemesh, if the sun shone upon him, damim loy, then he has blood. Okay, we'll see what that means. And then the next part of the pasuk should be a little bit of a comma here, I'll tell you, because shalem yishalem, he has to pay back, he shall surely pay. Im ein loy, and if he has nothing, v'nimkar, as we were just saying, he is sold, b'gnevusay, for his theft. Let's understand what this means. Okay, so first let's see Rashi im b'machteres. So obviously we're talking about a thief. Now what happens with this thief? This thief is found in an underground passage, which means Kishahaya Chayser es Habayis, when he was tunneling into the house, which means he's trying to get in secretly underhand. Okay? So it's the middle of the night, or it's the middle of the day, but nobody's around, and he's doing it in a very secretive way. Now let's say something happens to him. The owner comes and sees him coming into his house, and he strikes him, and the person dies. Is the owner responsible, or is the owner not responsible for the death of this thief? So let's see what Rashi says. Ein loy damim. There is no blood for him. So he says, ein zuritzicha. This is not considered murder. And why not? And he has a very strong language. Harehu, he says, kimeis meikarai. Because it's as if the thief is already dead. Why is the thief already dead? So he says a beautiful thing. And here comes, I'll just read you the Rashi, and then we'll see after. Very famous line that we quote many times. Kan, limdatscha Torah. So here the Torah is teaching us. Imba lahargecha hashkeim laharga. The famous line, right? Somebody comes to kill you, you kill them first, right? Okay, that's a good question, Leah. Very good question. So let's see what Rashi says. Why do we call him a person who is already as if he's dead? And why are we saying he's coming to kill? Because he says, v'zeh lahargecha, but this thief is coming to kill you. Why? Sharei yideyahu. Because he surely knows. She'ein adam maimid atzmai. Nobody is going to stand viraya and watch. She'noitlin mamayinai. When somebody else is taking away his money, be fun of in front of him, v'shaisek, and gonna just be quiet. This thief knows before he goes in that he's putting himself in the most dangerous situation. He is going there, and therefore not. So, what is his intention? What does the thief think? Let's see what he says. Therefore, lefichach al menas kainba. Therefore, he is coming for this. That if the owner of the property were to stand up against him, Yahargenu, he's going to kill the owner, right? You understand? He's not going to come there without arms. Why would he be so stupid? He's coming with the intention that if the owner is going to stand up against him, I hope he doesn't. I'm coming secretly. I hope I don't meet him. But if I do, well, I'll be the first to pounce on him before he pounces on me. And I know he's going to pounce on me because he's not going to watch me take away his money and just stand there. So this person is as if he's already dead before he came, which means because he is already, in a way, preparing for either to murder or to be murdered, if you want to say. So here's a fascinating thing. So you see, Sylvia, in this case, it's a difficult case because I'll tell you, this is only one pasuk. Because now we'll make it a bit more complicated with the next pasuk. Because the question was the undue force, right? That was the question. Over there, when that happened over here in Sydney now, the question was, did he use too much excessive force? Or, you know, that was the whole... He didn't kill him, but he died afterwards, didn't he? I think so. I don't know. He just assaulted him. I don't remember.
And he had to wait for the police, and the police arrested the fella.
Interesting. I don't know. It's an interesting discussion. No, recently in Sydney there was a robbery and somebody, there was a whole story like this, but I don't know what happened. I don't know. He didn't die. He didn't die.
He just assaulted him.
And the question is...
He waited for the police and then he was arrested for assaulting the thief.
Yeah, that was the question.
That's what it was.
Yeah, and so big question, are you allowed to, if somebody comes onto your property, are you how much, are you allowed to defend yourself or not? Well, I don't know. Is that the law? You're not. You're not. See, in Torah it doesn't... Not kill, even restrain, like even hurt them.
I don't know about other stuff, but killing, you're not allowed
no,
to
No, killing.
And they see your life is in danger. If your life is in danger, he comes with a gun at you.
You have to prove it.
It's crazy. It's unbelievable. So you see, Tyra has a different view. But let's see a little bit more complicated.
I do know that. This is a case in South Africa many years ago. They broke in two men and they were coming in via a swimming pool, back door, something, and somebody heard the noise, a young boy, and he took his father's gun and he actually shot the one dead.
Right.
And the police came And they said, no, you're defending yourself. You didn't know what his intention
was. Right. Okay, so in South Africa, but you see, South Africa is different than Australia in many ways. And the reason also is because, yes, fascinating, because over there the truth is that they would kill. Let's be honest, they have. That's what they do. I mean, that's the fact. Unfortunately, you know. Over here, I think it's a lot of thieves don't kill. I mean, that's the assumption. Well, you hope, but yeah. I don't know. Let's see. Let's see what the next pasuk says. It's interesting. Because then, as we just read, what happens if the sun shone upon him? What is the sun shone upon him? So usually we just think it means daytime, right? So let's see. You know, Rona, you want to see this beautiful Rashi? It's not just day. It's a fascinating thing. Im zarch ha-shemesh alav. Ein ze elokimin mashal. This is only a metaphor. What does it mean? He says, Im barur lecha hadavar. If it's clear to you, as clear as day, he says, sheyesh lo shalom imcha, that he has peace with you. In other words, he's never going to kill you. This thief, you are sure that this thief will not kill you. How could you be sure the thief is not going to kill you? We just said every thief will stand up. And he says, as sure as kashamesh hazeshu shalom ba'ilam, as sure as this sun, so to speak, that is the source of peace in the world. So he does not intend to kill you. He says, kach poshut l'cha she'ein ba'lahareg. So just as much as the sun brings peace, you are sure this thief is not coming with intent to kill. Afilu yamad ba'lamam in kenegdo, even in the case of the owner of the property were to stand up against him, how can you be so sure? So the example that is given, kigoin of hachayser lignoiv mamayin aben, if a father is coming to steal his son's money. Interesting, it's very exact. It doesn't say it the other way around, and actually it's discussed. It says, if the father is coming to steal, now when does a father steal from a child, but whatever. The father is coming to steal the money from the son. If the son sees the father climbing into the house, the son should know as clear as daylight that his father will not kill him. And the Chachamim say the other way around, you're not as clear, it's not as clear. A child can kill a parent. A parent is much less likely to kill a child. And that's what the Chacham, that's why the example is given this way. I remember, funny, this Rashi, I remember when I learned 30 years ago, I don't know why this one stuck in my mind, when I was in 10th grade, I thought, like, wow. Then I didn't understand. I thought, no, it's not true. But now I think I understand a little bit more, unfortunately. But it's very fascinating. So if you're 1,000% sure, I don't know, if it's your brother that you know loves you, and he's just desperate, right? So you know he's not going to kill you, right? So then, no, you can't just kill him just because he's coming into your house. No, because your life is not in danger. That's what he's saying. So it's a fascinating thing. Because one very important thing to remember here is that the killing over here is self-defense. It's not because the person's going on your property and not because he's doing something wrong to you. And that's something that we have to, as the Torah is very, you know, it's like that. To bring this person to justice, you have to leave to the Beis Din. That's not in your hands.
But
so,
it doesn't mention what the thief come with, like a knife.
I know. It doesn't say. I mean, I'm sure in the Gemara it discusses more.
Most of the thief comes with a knife.
With an arm, yes. So what we say, so we assume that he is coming armed because, as we said before, because his intention, as we say, is if he meets the owner, he's going to have to defend himself, right? So we assume he's coming with something. That's the assumption. He's not just coming with nothing. Okay, let's see as he continues. He says, and he says, beautiful, as Rashi says, ki biyadua sharachamei ha'avala ben, since it's common knowledge that a father has mercy on his son, ve'enoi ba'al iskei nefashes, and he does not come with regard to affairs of taking lives. In other words, he's not going to kill his son. Okay, so that's the, then what happens if you do kill? If in such a case, you're sure the person is coming in peace, and nevertheless, you kill the thief, then he says, Domim lai, he has blood. What does that mean, he has blood? It means he's responsible. But let's see how he says, Kachayu chashuv. In other words, the thief is considered to be alive. Uritzichahi, it's murder. Im yargenu balabayis, if the owner of the house kills him, then it's murder. But then the pasuk continued, and it was interesting. You have to read, as we see, we have to put a column, because now we're going on to paying back. So obviously now we're not talking about the owner, now we're talking about the thief. So what happens? Hopefully the thief is not hurt. Let's hope we just catch him. What must he do? Shalem yishalem, haganav mamain shaganav. So the thief has to pay back the money that he stole. And even more than that, and if he doesn't have it, as we said, then he has to be sold. But he says, "Ve'einoi chayev misa," and he is not subject to the death penalty. Okay. I just want to see.
I understand, Dina.
Yeah.
So he is considered.
If he's sure that he's come, as we said, this pasuk is, if the owner is sure, as clear as sun, you know, the sunlight, that the person is not coming with intention to kill, and he kills the thief, and he kills the thief, then he's considered a murderer, because then he's just. Okay, so he gave an example of proof. If it's a father coming into your house, you can't kill him. Okay, so yeah, it's hard to prove, but I suppose in. Then it would be a bit hard to prove. You're right. Yeah. You would think. Although maybe family, I don't know. Maybe in desperate situations, I don't know. I don't know, Hannah. Maybe it's also in cases of, how do you say it, like in inheritance cases, and, you know, I don't know. Do I know? You know, people have think that it's theirs. No, they're justified. Yes. So then, and maybe even in that case, no, I'm saying, yeah, with a sibling, even in that case, the Beis Din would say, he's not going to kill you, you know, yeah. We know, yeah. You know, he just thought the money is his, so, yeah, so it would be a, yeah. Anyways, we don't want to think about this, but these things happen, but it's just fascinating how the fascinating part is that it's all so, relevant even now. I just want to show you something interesting that he says, if you look at the rest of the Rashi, when the Unculus says that if the sun shone upon him, so we're on page 278, says it's a little bit of a slightly different way of looking what the sun shone upon him means. That's talking if the eyes of witnesses fell upon him. So that means like this, she'im itzo edim, if witnesses found the thief in the act of breaking in, koidem sheba balabayis, let's just say, before the owner of the house came, witnesses saw, right? Kesheba balabayis negda, and then the owner of the house came against him. So they tell the owner, don't kill the thief. We're going to take him to court. Then, and he nevertheless does it, then he has blood. Right? So if the owner kills the thief, then too bad. You can't do that. Even if the thief is armed, so to speak, right? Because there's witnesses and he's really not in danger at that point. And it's just he's angry, which is he's right to be angry, but nevertheless he has to control his anger and leave it to the Beis Din to take care of. As he says, because once there are people who see him, ein hagon of hazeh ba'al iskei nefashis. Then we say the thief is not going to come with regard to affairs of taking lives. The lo yahareg es habala mamen, he's not going to kill the owner of the property. Fascinating, because he doesn't want to be locked up for murder, so to speak, right? So he's going to be much less likely, even if he continues with the robbery, he knows people have seen him, he's going to be much less likely to do any physical harm. He might just try to get away with the money, but he won't actually kill. So here the owner has to be much more careful and hold himself back much more. Okay, it's interesting. I have much more self-control. Fascinating thing. Okay, let's see one more pasuk, so, because this is just the finishing of this concept. Im hi matze timatze biyode agneva. So if the theft will be found in his hand, so in the hands of the thief, as we say, and he gives me shor, at chamar, at se, you know, whether it be an ox or a donkey or a sheep, chayim, alive. Remember before we said he sold it. So here he didn't sell it, right? So here we're talking just stole, and he, you know, like as we say, a quick stealing. So he didn't do anything to it. He didn't sell it. He didn't shecht it. What does he do? Shnayim yishalim, he pays back double, right? That's the usual. So that really, this applies to any object, just giving the more common things that are stolen. But whether it be an animal or an object, that's what the Chachamim say, whatever it is, whether riches, whatever wealth, whatever it may be, you pay back double. That's the halacha. Okay, so this is the end of this concept. Let's go now, we move on. Now, when we started, beginning with the shard, do you remember we said that there's different types of damages? Arba avos nezikin, they're called the four main categories of nezikin. And we discussed the shor shenogach, the shor, the ox that gored. That was the not usual way, but it was very dangerous that he harmed another animal or a person. Here we're coming to the last two categories, and that was maiver and hever, which was when the ox actually causes damage in the natural way, either by eating, just grazing on somebody else's property, or trampling, or as we said, the fire. Remember, if you start a fire and it spreads. So here, these are the two psukim that deal with that. So let's see. Ki yaver ish sode ekerim. So when a man will lead an animal to a field or a vineyard. Okay, so it doesn't belong to him, right? He's going into somebody else's private property. Vishilach es beira. And what is he doing? He says whether he let loose the animal, uvir bistei acher, or it just grazed in another's field. Meitav sadehu, umeitav karma yishalim. The best of his field and the best of his vineyard shall he pay. In other words, whatever damage the animal did to the other person's field, he has to pay back. And interesting, he has to pay back from the best of his crops. So he can't just give inferior, he has to give the best quality. If the animal ate, I don't know, a good wheat or a good grapes or whatever it is, he has to pay back from the best of what he has to pay back, because he's responsible. Because we might think it's my animal, it's not me. No, your animal, you have to watch him. You are responsible. I want to do one more pasuk. Kiseitz, as we say, this is the fourth of the different nizikin, the different damages. Kiseitz eish, when a fire will go forth, umatza kaitzim, and find thorns. And it's very, very specific, because the reason why with the stress is like this is when a person does damage this way, this is called like a grumma. This is the least direct. This is a damage where you might think you're not responsible. Because let's say you've made a fire in your own property, okay? So it's in your own property. But what happens? The fire caught onto some thorns, as it says over here. V'nechal god, then it spreads and it goes to your neighbor's property. You didn't intend for it to go to your neighbor's property. You didn't light it in your neighbor's property, but you lit it in your own property and you weren't careful. Now, even though it's an indirect damage, you are still responsible, right? This is a grumma damage, an indirect damage you've caused. And it goes very exact, so it found thorns. V'nechal godishoyakama. So what does it do? It either, and a stack of grain, or a standing crop, as he says, a hasade, or a field, shalem, like a complete field, as we say, will be consumed. What do you have to do? Shalem yishalem hamaver es habeira. Then the one who lit the fire has to pay back. I want to show you something fascinating. Just, I thought this was really, really beautiful. These sheets we'll do, we're going to do slowly, but we'll do the first two from this. This is an unbelievable thing from the Gemara. And I'll keep one just in case. Yeah. Whoa. Crazy stuff. Are you serious? In Torah, he would be held very responsible, as you can see. Very, very, very.
That's what I was going to ask.
But I don't know about a child. Yeah, I don't know. Child is different anyways, because, you know, 15 he would be responsible. No, that's not a child anymore. No, not in Torah, it's not. Yeah. Sorry, Hannah. What? I know, but it's a problem. Yeah.
Those dogs get put down. Yeah. Nothing happens to the owner.
Well, as we said, if the yeah, that's a.
Those poor dogs are kept in yeah. those conditions.
Well, they shouldn't be, as we know. But you know what, Chana? We have a mitzvah tzar balei chayim, right?
Yes,
we
were,
so that this person is transgressing that. So in some cases, Hashem's going to have to take care. You realize, because we can't hold him accountable unless the dog has done it three times, which by which time you hope he's dead. But yeah, but then the owner would be responsible. Yeah, and then for sure he's going to be yeah. So it's an interesting one. It's a big problem. Yes. Okay, I want to show you something interesting. I'm sorry, I did it just to make less copies. So it's a little funny to follow. But you see where it says start here? That piece of Gemara comes first, in the middle. Okay, I want to show you something interesting. This is quite scary, but amazing how the psukim could just simply mean and then how much deeper they can be. Okay, so the Gemara says like this. The Gemara cites an Agadic teaching regarding the verse discussed above. Okay, so you see it's in the middle of the page where it says start here. Do you see in the middle? Okay, so it says, Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yechanan. So Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yenison, yes. Ein pur onus ba'ala oilam, tribulation visits the world, Ella only, bizman shaharishayim ba'olam, only when the wicked are in the world. And but the problem is, ein maschelas ella min hatzadikim tchila. But it initiates only upon the righteous first. Now go to the top, and let's see what that has to do with what we've just read. So they say we can learn it from our pasuk, which just sounded like a simple thing of starting a fire and thorns, and then it spreads. So what does the Gemara tell us? So he says, Ki seitze eish umatsa kaitzim, right? It says, if a fire shall go forth and find thorns. E masai eish yaitza, when does a fire, which means tribulation, suffering, pain, whatever it is, terrible plagues, go forth? Bizman shekaitzin mitzuyin la, when thorns are available to it, because we know that dry thorns feed the fire, right? That's the best thing for the fire. So when there are wicked people around, the fire spreads. Okay, but then it says, but what did the pasuk say? What will it harm? Ve'eina mascheles ela min hatzadikim, but it initiates only with the righteous. Shenemar v'nech al godish, as it says in the same verse, and a stack of grain, which means the group of the righteous is consumed. Ve'achal godish loynemar. It doesn't say, and the fire consumes a stack of grain. Ela v'nechal. Rather, it says, and a stack of grain is consumed, meaning shenechal godish kfar, that the stack of grain is already consumed by the time the fire reaches the thorns. What he's trying to say, in other words, is that unfortunately, the first ones that are harmed are the good ones, even though the cause is really the wicked ones. Now, why? Let's learn a little bit more in the Gemara. It sounds so unfair. As we say, life is very unfair, it is. I just want to show you something. Look on the bottom, number 30. The wicked are compared to thorns that serve no positive purpose and are tinder for the flames. The righteous who live productive lives are compared to a stack of produce, right? That's what the Marashah says. The verse actually mentions three items that are consumed. A stack of grain, as we said, the standing grain, and then we said the field. So a stack of grain refers to the sinless children who study Torah before their teachers, who do not yet have stature. The standing grain refers to the exceptionally righteous persons in the generation. And the field refers to the general populace, not good or bad, in between people. This is from the Arachayim, actually on our pasuk, as it says over here. Okay, now I just want to show you something on 31, and then we'll go back and read a little more in the Gemara. So we have the big discussion. So he says, this does not mean necessarily that even those righteous persons who are entirely free of sin are also visited by Jesus. That wouldn't sound fair, right? So he says, no, how does it work? Unfortunately, rather. When the Gemara says that the righteous people are consumed first, it refers to righteous people who have a few sins who that make them vulnerable to this fire. However, these paltry sins would not have warranted the emergence of the sweeping fire on their own. It is only once the evil deeds of the wicked have occasioned the blaze of destruction that the righteous are likewise affected. So do you understand here? So really on their own it would have been overlooked, but because of all the terrible things that are happening around them, then, and once the fire is out, that's a problem. That's when even the smallest things can be held accountable. We'll see soon, such hashgacha pratis. We're not going to get to the next part. Next week we will, all connected to Pesach, even though this has nothing to do with Pesach, but still. So let's see in a minute how this is connected to Pesach. But anyways, he says interesting thing. Also, there is an opinion, which is, again, its own philosophical discussion for its own shir. And we have this many times discussed in Torah that sometimes we do find that righteous people do suffer on account of their generation, right? We even say that righteous people offer atonement for the generation. So that's a hard thing for us to understand. Sometimes you do see people that are really amazing. I mean, every person is amazing, but if a person, a real tzaddik, passes away, sometimes we say it could be, it's really nothing to do with them, their own deeds. It could just be for the deeds of the people around them, or whatever it may be, as he says. So it could happen. That is a possibility. I'll show you number 33. Look at number 33, see how connected. One may ask, I'm sorry, we're not going to go to number 33 yet. Let's look on the next part of the Gemara first. So now, in the second paragraph there on that first column, still the same page. So it says there's a braisa with a related theme. Rav Yosef taught in a braisa. My dechsev, what is the meaning of that which is written in regard to the night of the firstborn of Egypt were struck dead? You remember what it says? So when it was the makas b'chayres, what did it say? It says, v'atam loytetsu ishmi pesach beisai ad baiker. And as for you, we were told you shall not leave the entrance of the house until morning. Why? Why shouldn't we go out? So we say, the famous thing we said is, kevan shenitan reshus l'mashchis, once the force of destruction has been given authority to wreak damage, einay mafchin bein tzaddikim l'rishayim, right? It's not going to distinguish between the righteous and the wicked. Thus the Jews who would have been endangered, right? The Jews would have been endangered if they had emerged from their homes. Even more than that, as we just said, who's going to be affected first? Not the Egyptians, but the Jews. As he says, Shenemar, v'ichrati mimcha, mimeich tzaddik v'rasha. And I have cut off righteous and wicked from among you. So the righteous is mentioned first. And I want to show you something interesting. Look at the bottom on note number 33. I think it's over here. So he says like this. One may ask, was Hashem himself, right? We said who carried out the killing of the firstborn, right? That's what it says, right? Ani v'loy malach, right? The famous thing that we say in the Haggadah, I am the one that's going to do it. So what does it mean? So can't Hashem avoid? So he says, what then is this force of destruction that the Jews were cautioned to avoid? So Rashi actually answers, he says that nighttime is the province of the injurious forces. It says, in it the night creep all the beasts of the wild. Thus the Israelites were told to stay indoors to protect themselves from the injurious forces that routinely render the night dangerous. So that's one thing. And as he says, another thing, the force of destruction was a natural consequence of the huge number of corpses lying throughout Egypt. Although the Jews would be protected from the initial plague of the firstborn, they would not be protected from its whatever terrible aftermath if they did not take care to avoid it themselves. Now this is a very interesting thing. Again, it's a whole discussion. But you see from our pasuk, once the fire is out, it's out. And anybody in its way can be harmed. And that's why you have to take extra precautions. And that's why also it follows, also the Gemara discusses afterwards, also the whole thing that a person cannot just put themselves in danger and say, well, I'm not meant to die today, so I can go out. Doesn't work like that. That's not how it works. You have to take precautions. And if the fire is out, you're in more danger than you normally would have been. That's what it seems. Very interesting. I want to just show you something interesting. Just
the
to read.
The fire is out.
I'm saying if it's out, if it's not out, if it's out of there, out of control. I don't mean it's extinguished. That's the wrong word. If the fire is burning, yes. So if it's out there, as we say, out of control, right? Okay, so he says a very interesting thing. The Gemara presents a heartfelt response to this teaching. Just beautiful. Even though it's not connected, just to finish off this thing, Rav Yosef wept, saying, it's very, very beautiful. Kulai hai nami le'im daimin, are the righteous also like nothingness, that they are first in line for punishment? So the Gemara counters, Abaye said to Rav Yosef, this is not a misfortune for the righteous, rather tivusahu legabehu, but it's actually a favor, so they should not have to witness the tragedies that will befall their generation. As he says, kimipnei hara nesaf atzadik, because of the impending evil that the righteous one was gathered in. So it's also a whole different way of looking at it. There's just one more beautiful thing at the end. It says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, just one more paragraph. Just look on the next page. When traveling, it's very just connected. It says, when traveling, a person should always enter an inn when it is ki toiv. That's the word used. Ki toiv. What is ki toiv? Ki toiv means light. Because what did Hashem say by the light? Ki toiv. That was the first thing. Vayara likim es ha'ar, ki toiv, right? Hashem saw the light that it was good. Which means, he says, and not wait until it gets dark. V'yetze b'ki toiv, and he should depart again only when it is light. And not start so early that he is traveling at night, because it is unsafe to travel then. As it says, right, you should not leave your house till the morning. And nowadays it is a little bit different because we have light. But I must say that there is something interesting that people have a thing that, you know, when you're driving, people who like to drive long distances. So we have a thing nowadays, it's become the norm. But I must say the Lubavitcher Rebbe had a fascinating thing years and years before it was all those signs on the highways, that he used to say that if you're traveling long distances, so you should stop, I think it was every 2 hours. But at night, every hour. So that was based on this idea that at night it's much more dangerous. There's much more danger at night. It's fascinating. Now they have all these things, but that was even before that. That was I remember some Bachrim, you know, they take everything very literally. So they said they drove. Well, I remember I think I had a cousin here many years ago. So they drove from here to Melbourne, right? So then it was even longer. The highway wasn't even as good as now. So like it was 11 hours, let's say. Now it's you could do it in 9, but then it was 11. So he said every 2 hours they got out of the car for 1 second. They ran around the car. They went further. They were listening, you know. But the truth is, in a way, even that's good because you have to wake up. It's the idea of yes. So a fascinating thing. Okay. I think we're going to stop over here because I'll tell you why. The next topic is its own topic. We're going to go next week to a fascinating, beautiful thing, which is called the Four Shomrim, the Four Guardians. Very interesting also, and also very meaningful.